Around Comics, Episode 34.
From Chicago, this is Around Comics, a roundtable discussing topics in and around the world of comics. I'm your host, Christopher Niesman, and I am joined, as always, by my partner in crime and the producer of the show, Brian Salazar.
Yeah, whatever.
We're also joined by our Around Comics regular, Mr. Tom Gators.
Hello.
And our special guest this week is the host of Word Balloon. He is Mr. John Suntress.
I am the Jack Germond of comics.
Who's Jack Sherman?
Oh, that's a John McLaughlin, a McLaughlin Group report. I figure we're a panel show, so I should be like...
Never heard of it.
He just went so far over your head, Chris.
Is he in a comic book?
He should be. He should be. He looks like Joe Besser at, like, 85.
Didn't he team up with Hector Hammond?
Nasty Third Stooge. Not so hard.
Folks, I would like to mention that this episode of Around Comics is brought to you by GeekArmor.com.
GeekArmor.com.
Can you let everyone know about GeekArmor?
Sure. GeekArmor.com sells t-shirts with the geek in mind, featuring a great selection of comic book t-shirts as well as video games, sci-fi, TV, and movie shirts. You are sure to find something you like. Check out their latest original design, a red shirt with a phaser hole on the front that reads, "I went on an away mission and all I got was this lousy t-shirt." And now the good folks at Geek Armor are offering a 10% discount to all Around Comics listeners. Just use the coupon code AROUNDCOMICS when placing your order and receive an additional 10% off. That's Around Comics, all one word, and get 10% off. GeekArmor.com. Check them out today.
Well, GeekArmor sounds awesome, guys.
GeekArmor is awesome. My girlfriend loves her shirt.
I ordered like 4 shirts from GeekArmor. I'm going to wear them at Wizard World. Do they
have, like, Tom, have you gotten the Flash shirt yet?
No, they're out of the large right now, and I think I could get away with a medium, but I like my t-shirts to be billowy.
You don't like the form fitting?
Yeah, I like sort of a billowing parachute.
He likes his
parachute.
Torso to remain a mystery.
Yeah, I don't want anyone to see my oddly shaped torso.
The superfluous third nipple that you conceal so well.
I've seen that old in those conventions.
It's frightening. Around Comics is recorded every Friday from 7 to 9 at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue. If you're in the area, please drop by. We would love to meet you. Occasionally, people like John Suntress walk in and...
Wrangle them and tie them to a chair.
Comics,
so. I had nowhere else to go.
I don't know where to go.
I had so much fun last time, honestly. I'm pleased to come back. And
living on the streets, tough.
Every Friday, we would love to have you here.
It's
always fun. If you download through iTunes, which we know a lot of you do, please leave us a review. That is a very kind thing to do.
If you've already written one, is there any way to set up a fake profile to write a second review?
I keep trying to find out, Tom, and I haven't been able to do it yet.
You just need another email address. I've done like 25.
Yeah, no.
That's okay.
Lonely comic book reader.
I'm so sad now because whenever we got like 4 reviews, but they're all from you, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And they're all bad.
I missed the boat.
This show sucks.
I'm Vader 39. Yeah. I'm Get Smart 89.
I'm Vader's Secret 25 gives the comic gives it 3 stars.
Well, folks, if you haven't already discovered, this is one of our lighter and funnier shows, we hope. If you are a first-time listener, we would encourage you to go back and listen to one of Monday's episodes. It is a longer...
one of Mondays? We had multiple Mondays?
I don't know. We're doing like 8 episodes.
A Monday?
Any Monday episode.
Oh, there you go.
They're the ones with wire-to-wire comic news and top-of-the-stack recommendations, and they're like 2 hours long. And
bumpers
Yeah, all that stuff.
Chris will talk about Greg Rucka at some point in the...
I love Greg Rucka.
We know. Oh,
John, remember that time you interviewed Greg Rucka?
All right, that's enough of that.
Are you enjoying Red Panda?
Quiet.
So awesome.
We've put a Greg Rucka moratorium on the show.
No kidding. All right, never mind.
No more Greg Rucka time.
I like to talk about Greg Rucka.
Big fan of Chad.
A Ruckatorium.
Ruckatorium.
We're taking a big
in effect now.
So anyway, this is one of the times that
you can't talk about Rucka until you get Rucka on the show. That's the rule.
The man is writing like 8.
It's a bad year to try and bug Greg Rucka.
He's writing like
not if you don't want to hear Chris talk about Greg Rucka.
All right.
writing like $8 a month. He's going on vacation.
Enough.
I'm going to try and talk to him.
Ruckatorium in effect. Three, two, now.
We're taking a big chance by recording these episodes so far in advance because comics might be done.
Well, the world
by
could
the time
end.
These
that was
come
a great hobby,
yeah.
wasn't it?
Yeah.
Now what am
by
I going to do?
By the time this comes out, people will be like,
what? I have so much money,
what
I bought three
comic?
Condos.
What is a comic book?
I hear they are going digital.
You know, actually, that I think we are reaching that point where, and you see companies like Speakeasy that fold up because they put out so many comic books.
Ding, there's our Speakeasy reference.
But really, it's yeah. like, you know, what is the breaking point of the floppy, and what are they going to do? I mean, is the floppy going to be fatter? Is it going to go to 48 pages or 30, you know?
I think the floppy, as we know, will sort of always be around, and as long as people write good stuff, it'll be there. And, you know, we were talking about this before, about the collector mentality, and I think it's just something about having those issues every month and getting them, you know, picking them up at your comic shop. And I think it'll change. Well, that's you know, certainly one of the issues.
I just bought Umbra number 2 for $6.
Wow.
But it's like a 48 page.
Yeah, but the thing is, you pick that up. This week, I added a bunch of stuff, and I had to look through all my books. And I got the first issue of Cobb, and I enjoyed it.
Me
and
too.
I was like,
me too.
I liked it, and then I looked at it, I'm like,
$4.
$4, and I'm like, it's good, but man, $4 is a
pack
lot.
Of smokes.
What about the
not
annuals?
In Chicago. That's a half of that.
What annuals. About the annuals that came out this year that were $5?
Yeah.
And I got to be honest, a couple of those stories, I'm like, this could have been covered in two issues, couldn't it? And you know, and
well, that's $6.
Yeah, I guess it would have been $6. You're right about that.
Well, then,
but yeah, I just didn't. I don't know. I didn't think they were as special as they could have been. I was a little disappointed.
Well, this is the only thing that I'll say on. Well, who am I kidding? We're gonna keep buying them. We're going to keep buying. We won't buy
Jesus Christ, don't tell him ahead of time.
No, but no, this is my thing. You know, I have a comics budget, and I'm going to buy floppies. You know, but when did floppies become the new buzzword for single issues?
More
no. Well, and I don't mean that as, you know, Quesada gets really offended by the phrase floppies. And it's like, look, I don't mean it to denigrate. How do you want to say it? Monthlies? Whatever you want to
flaccids.
Say. I don't use the term in a derogatory way.
Singles?
Just, yeah, they are they're the singles.
Mm-hmm.
They're the,
yeah. It's kind of turned into the... It's one of those words that came around to describe...
I invented it, along with the internet.
Thank you, Al.
The high floppy.
Man, bear pig.
And then Tom broke the internet in half.
Yeah, with all that talk.
But no, I have a budget. I'm going to buy single issues. I'm going to buy trades. It's just a matter of how many I'm going to buy.
Right.
So,
Tom. Go ahead.
John, do you have anything to say?
I made the weird choice this week of actually I've been buying Fables and Invincible in trade. And now I've decided to start getting him in single because apparently I don't enjoy
you,
money.
Free.
I don't
yeah,
enjoy,
man.
But I like reading stuff in singles better.
See, I like reading trades.
It's just like
I'd buy everything in trades if they would come out, you know, if they would come out over the month, yeah, or you know, every 3 months or something, every 6 months even.
That's why I don't understand we haven't made that jump yet, because I feel the same way. It's like if you know that January is always going to be Superman, February is Batman, March is the Flash, and, you know, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I'm a DC guy, but you know, if you know those things, and then you know, and then also. You know, 6 months later that July is going to be the next Superman or whatever, fine, give me two, you know.
Yeah, I'll buy six trades a month or 10 trades a month or, you know, whatever, you know, it works out to.
Is that we are in an age of writing for the trade, but my favorite book of this last week was Detective Comics. And that was a single, self-contained issue.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, I'm looking forward to reading that. That's cool. Paul Dini.
Yeah, and Dini
J.H. Williams.
And J.H. Williams are.
Yes,
and actually, you guys talk. I'm going to go grab it because you have to look.
Well,
I'll be right back.
Right. Tom, Jesus we just
Christ,
keep.
So Slimline.
Oh, yes. Go ahead.
You know, I was able to make that transition to The Punisher, to trades.
Yeah.
And I'm very happy I did it because I think Garth Ennis's Punisher stories do read better that way. But I'm, you know, Tom, I feel the same way. I did that with Powers and. You know, 3 weeks later, you know, it's Michael Corleone, they sucked me back in.
I've done it with a bunch of different books, but the problem is the books that I've done it with, I don't buy the trades on a regular basis. You know, it's like, I do it with, like, Invincible is one book that I've never picked up. The The singles on. 100 Bullets is something that I switched over to trades.
Me too.
Fables is something I Fables I buy singles, but I wish I bought it in trades. But there's a handful of books that I did that with, but I won't go and... I mean, I don't stay up to date with them. It's like, oh, well, you know, I haven't picked up the last three trades. I'll go and pick them all up at one time and read them all at one time. And I enjoy doing that, though, especially depending on the book.
Yeah.
You know, there's some books that I really would much rather read six issues at one time than one issue
just,
every, you
it's
know.
Just a preference thing. I mean, I just, when I read them, it's like, for me, if I get them in the single, I almost trick myself into getting double the value because I learn to enjoy it more reading the single and then going back to read six at a time and enjoying it that way too. And like I was saying,
you're a very complicated man, Tom.
I know. I read every book I buy 25 times in different combinations. I read everything that came out in March.
Do you guys buy the trades of the monthlies that you like, you know, that
no.
you get the collection?
Well, what I've been doing,
this
is something that I've been doing.
I mean, obviously, there are fans that do both. Yeah,
well, I mean, I own like five different editions of, you know,
impressive.
Of Watchmen, or you know, I own like three different editions of, you know, I'm gonna
really?
Own like three different editions of Dark Knight Return because I've bought the originals on some stuff, then I buy the trade to just read it all the time because I keep going back and reading it,
right.
And then they come out with like a hardcover and
oversized.
I've fallen in love with those things.
Triple size.
But what I've started doing is, and this is sort of my new, you know, ethos is that I want to take all my back issues of stuff and trade them in on trades because I don't want the back issues
this
anymore.
This has turned
I
into
get rid of
dinner
them.
For
I want,
five.
I'd rather really? Have.
We now have Thai food at.
Oh, all right. I'd rather have the hardcover or you know or something you know with a little more weight to it.
I understand that, but I just can't justify the expense, you know. But you're right; you're not alone. I know a lot of people that do that.
I don't generally do that. I mean, I rarely will buy the books and then buy the trade, but I do find myself like buying the first three issues of something and then go, you know what? I'm going to wait on the rest of them for the trade.
I've done that too, and mostly the first and second.
Yeah,
I can't do that. It drives it would kill me to own something. Twice.
It would literally.
I'm so anal, but I'm also anal in the sense that I need just one. I can't handle having two. I just think, oh God, I could have gotten something else.
But
I'm just weird like that, though. I have problems.
Well, I think you know part of the you know you we went back to the price point on it, and I think it is going to get to a saturation point where it's like, okay. But for the, you know, I mean, Spider-Man's never going to have a problem selling no matter how much they put that book
at.
You know, certain books, X-Men, you know, whatever.
Sure.
There's never going to be a problem for it. What's going to be the problem is all the other books that are, you know, independent books or just smaller titles, stuff like that, that aren't going to survive because, you know,
if you're
people
not
aren't going to pay. Yeah. But they might survive in a different format. And that's, you
yeah,
know,
I mean,
it's that sort of like, what's that point?
Someone who doesn't buy Exterminators because they're like, well, it's not worth $3. Probably still isn't going to pick it up and be like, oh, this is $12. You
but
know,
like
they're
Vertigo,
still
right,
price.
Right.
Vertigo is one of those few companies, and obviously because it's a division of DC, maybe it's easier, but they know that their real money is coming in trades. So they're
is patient. It really, though?
Yeah, I think so. At least that's what they've always said in panels and stuff and have said, we're patient, we will wait.
Well, their cutoff point is way lower than anybody else's.
For Vertigo?
For Vertigo it is, but still something like Swamp Thing. Vertigo books still get canceled.
Sure. Well,
I mean,
was it Sleeper? Not Sleeper, the no, that Tracker.
Yeah.
Tracker, the British, obviously not Sleeper. Sleeper is great.
Yeah, but what were the sales on Sleeper? That would be interesting.
No, but you know, I think because Jim Lee had faith in that book and knew that it's like, look, people will come, don't worry. And obviously then grew.
Wait, on Sleeper?
On Sleeper, yeah, with Wildstorm. Because
that's when Jim Lee was still the head of Wildstorm.
I think Wildstorm.
Is he no longer running Wildstorm technically?
Didn't he sell it to DC? Yeah.
Well, it's part of DC.
Well, yeah,
but
he sold the rights to
but
DC.
Yeah, he's still,
but
you know, it's
still
like an internet company swallowing you up, and it's like, yeah, we'll still let you run the biz.
Right.
Yeah,
he's no, that's still his baby. I mean, that's definitely. Still
I think
his
their cutoff point's even lower than Vertigo's. I mean, they have
right
books
that
would be. I mean, like
well, what,
American
what,
Way, Wintermen. Those books would be disasters for
books.
Any other
those
company.
Those are great
like,
books.
Well, American Way. I mean the sales on that. I think it was you had posted on the
it's
forum
like 8,000.
Yeah, to the right. The Yahoo group that does the comments on the monthly sales, and I think they referred to American Way as
a sales disaster. Yeah, I mean if that was a DC book, it wouldn't make it all the way to 8.
Well, you
it
know,
would
that,
be done now. You
no,
know,
like, that's an interesting yeah. question, though, is that if American Way were a DC book, if it had the DC imprint, how much would that improve sales of that book?
Oh, I don't think that's a guarantee. I mean, look at, you know, like Blood. I mean, there have been very interesting things like Bloodhound.
Look at the thing.
Really, exactly. That's a great point.
But the
thing, excellent, yeah.
Here's the weird thing. If you look
a
at
major
just
Marvel
the numbers,
character.
Though.
A major,
the,
yeah,
the thing sold 20,000 copies, which is still
which
almost two
okay.
and a half times more than American
yeah, which
Way.
Would be, which would certainly be okay at Vertigo and Wildstorm. But yeah, I mean, obviously disastrous for Marvel.
It's such a skewed
What have we seen as a cutoff point for Vertigo? When do Vertigo...
10,000, I think, is when they start. Because that's where Swamp Thing, the last one that they canceled. Well, once it gets down to around 10,000...
Joshua Dysart
yeah,
Swamp Thing?
Once it gets down to 10,000, if the trade sales aren't spectacular, like, they start looking at... Again, that's sort of the... It's never been officially said, but that's sort of where it gets brought up.
You know, I was looking for this, you know, Stand on Exterminators, which is a book that we try and, you know, we've thrown ourselves on the Exterminators cross. Tom has picked that one up for
yeah,
me.
Please.
Such a good book.
On the fly swatter,
if Exterminators gets canceled, I'll drown a puppy.
Is it an ongoing? I thought it was a finite series.
It's an ongoing.
Well, that's
interesting.
It may be a finite series, which yeah. is
well,
a shame.
In a sense, aren't all series finite series?
very Immanuel Kant. I like that. Very good.
Have you guys heard
you
of this Simon
you a,
Oliver?
Oh,
and Immanuel Kant, yes.
You know, I started buying Exterminators because of Tony Moore, okay. but I love the writing on the... Where did this Simon Oliver guy come from? Why can I not find him
from
on
heaven.
The internet?
From heaven.
He's
from
a mystery man.
I can find me on the internet.
Watch out,
Oliver. Why can I not find Simon
he's
Oliver?
He's gonna freaking find you, and he's gonna talk about you. All
no,
the
I'm
time.
Trying. To, I'm trying to find out who this guy is. If he's written anything else, I can't find anything out
I
about the
I
guy.
I heard
writing. Tony Moore just gets the scripts dropped in his chimney.
Signed
Simon Oliver.
Are you guys Rick Remender fans?
Yes,
absolutely.
He does interesting things. Well. Now,
we
just,
screwed up a Rick Remender interview. We could
so
have had him
I.
on the show.
Also, oh, did you? What? Sorry, I called. I said Brian Potion was a Conan O'Brien writer, and I mean, I got everything wrong about The Last Christmas. I was such a jerk, and I feel so. I'm sorry, Rick, if you're listening. But Sea of Red's awesome. Love Fear Agent, and you know, talking. Here we go, name dropping. Talking to Chuck Dixon the other day.
No.
We were talking about how. Things like Team Zero was such a great book, and he's like, you know, it's okay, the floppies didn't sell that well, but he didn't say floppies, I'm saying floppies, but that, you know, he's like, the libraries are picking up these trades,
yeah.
I love doing these stories, I love doing these non-superhero genres, because all the libraries and the bookstores get it, and they both get it,
right.
understand it, and literally are getting it, buying it, and everything.
And Team Zero is a kick-ass book.
Oh, I
yeah.
love that book.
And it's, if you want to read a good war story, yeah. Team Zero is what you want. And I really think that down the line, this is going to be, you know, in a lot of ways, comic book salvation, that this is slowly creeping into the book market where there is some legitimacy, and it's growing, and it hasn't stopped growing.
Well, is it almost, you know, like the VHS or now DVD market and how that's gotten into Hollywood and how a lot of people will even go direct to video now? You think you're going
to
see more and more...
Direct to trade. I was kind of hoping so. That seemed to be the case around 2000.
I think it's
going to
be totally. I mean, something like a Superman trade could get away with it without anything leading into it, or you know, like
sure.
there's a market. It kind of depends on what you're going for. Like a if Exterminators went a straight to trade. I don't know if that would.
Well, somebody like Alan Moore with Lost Girls can.
Well, I mean,
that depends on the creator.
It's going to be. Publisher, the name of the publisher, the name of the character, the name of the writer, the name of the artist, who's on the book. You're always going to have a certain amount of trades like that would work, but I think what they have to look at is price point. I mean, for the books that aren't selling in individual, you know, single issues at $2.99 or $3.99, whatever it may be, if you could package that up, at, you know... Why are comics so expensive? Because of the paper, because of the quality of the coloring and the ink and, you know, everything else. And obviously the marketing. But at the same time, why not produce trades on cheaper stock, you know, with, you know, especially something like the Exterminators. Does it need to be on glossy paper? It may look better, but it's not a better story.
Well,
because
Vertigo does a good job of that.
Right.
Vertigo uses the newsprint paper on their trades.
And that's why they're able to do those at $9.99.
Right, exactly. The DMZ, I'm looking at it now, and it's $9.99.
Well, one of the things that sort of interests me is about how we have sort of a homogenous nature of quality of books. Like, every book DC puts out, every book Marvel puts out seems like it's directed that everyone has to be colored, and it all has to be colored to this quality, and they all have to be $2.99. Where, like, stuff like, it's interesting how Image, and now everyone's eating, so I can talk as much as I want right now. So, hey, what's up, guys?
Chew faster.
So, Image does something like they put out the slimline type book. Mm-hmm.
And that was
you're
inspired.
Saying something, I think it's interesting that to say you have, if you're a company, you have room for a $1.99 book. You have room for a $2.99 book. You have room for books more expensive than that. You
well,
can
I just,
have
like
a
I
variety
said,
of costs.
I bought Umbra, which was from Image, and that was $6.
Yeah.
But it was like 52 pages.
But the
whatever.
Issue is Marvel and DC don't need to do that. They're selling 20,000 issues of a book they're going to cancel at $2.99. You know what I mean? It's like they don't have to find those more interesting.
No, but the other companies seem there's.
They're trying,
says,
they're trying to emulate Marvel and DC as opposed to emulating...
Yeah, like, there are companies that I think could benefit from there being a wider variety of, cost point on certain things. Like, maybe Exterminators would sell better if it wasn't $2.99, just to pick an example like that. You know, things like that. I mean, Marvel and DC, whatever, you could sell Uncanny X-Men for... your firstborn child, and like people still get it. I mean, it's not, they're not the ones that are going to make the changes to do that.
Well, one of the things I see with Marvel and DC is they still are very grounded in the superhero genre. Now, to their credit, especially DC, they've expanded out in Vertigo, and they absorbed Wildstorm, which is, you know, still very, very superhero. DC experimented with Gotham Central, which was an amazing series. Did sell very well.
You got Jonah Hex. Stuff like
how
that.
Much?
I love Jonah Hex.
Yeah. How much? And you know, I'm a Marvel guy, but to DC's credit, they have tried over and over, repeatedly, to step outside of the superhero genre. And you know, we say, well, it's not DC or Marvel's responsibility to expand
beyond
the market.
Super. Okay.
But, you know, to an extent, isn't it their responsibility to do that?
Well, it's a responsible business move, I think, more than it is.
Well, but to their credit, and I think if you look at the most recent previews, you see, and, you know, when I spoke to a guy like Axel Alonso, who came from Vertigo and did great things at Vertigo before
came
going
from
to
Rolling
Marvel.
Stone.
Well, that's, and you're right.
That.
Yeah, really, that's
you
true.
Know, he
you're
was
right.
a totally out of the box guy.
Oh, yeah. No, you know, he's a cool guy. He's a great guy. And he couldn't talk at the time about a lot of things that were coming up for the Max line. But he's like, believe me, the Max line is not dead. We are doing things, and they will be non-superhero things. And sure enough, they're coming back with Zombie, which was a 70s Marvel character that is totally forgettable.
Oh, yeah,
but
I saw that.
Kind of a blank slate that they can certainly start with again. And I know that there are other crime projects on the way as well. Icon is a step in the right direction. And also this Sable and Fortune, we talked about it before the show started, I think was an attempt at a small attempt on their part to do something non-superhero.
Well, I think
we keep
God
doing this.
Damn
time.
It. Axel was also responsible for bringing one of our favorite. I jumped right in there, didn't I? No, Axel Alonso, I think, was responsible for bringing one of our favorite guests and writers into Marvel, and that's Matt Fraction. He saw a very talented writer and found a title that you normally wouldn't think of a writer like that being able to take over, and that's Punisher War Journal.
Yes.
And I'm really excited to see what Matt's going to do.
Like Charlie Houston and Moon Knight as well?
Yeah.
Well, going back to... Sorry, Tom, I'm
you
stepping
and I,
all
you
over
go
you.
First.
No, all right.
Hey, you go first, buddy.
My fight coming.
Going back to the question of is it the responsibility, but why... I mean... The only way that Marvel or DC should or would expand outside of the superhero genre is if that was what buyers wanted. Sorry to tell you, but superhero comics sell more than anything else. I mean, that's why there are so many of them.
To the established audience.
I agree. To the
and
established audience.
Enough that, yeah, that is their concern. And
well, again, to DC's credit, I think they did that with Vertigo. They didn't. I mean, Vertigo doesn't do amazing numbers as a publishing arm of Time Warner.
With floppies, but again, I wonder about
about the trades.
Yeah, but wasn't Vertigo just their attempt at like doing what you know, Warner Brothers did with Dimension Films, jumping on the indie sort of bandwagon and saying, "Hey, sort of we have joke. Indie, you know, we have indie films or we have indie comics too," but it's really just a company that did indie stuff, and you're, you know,
yeah. But 16 years later,
they're still producing good stuff. And that, yeah, that's
things.
They are.
Yeah, but it seemed like Vertigo was almost a place for DC to culture talent to start
cultivate,
it out.
Yeah.
You're listening to Around Comics. It's like talking to your best friend's sister, and she's hot.
What's funny is I'm going back to your comment about the Max thing, about them coming out with books. This is a slight tangent, but one of the interesting things with the sales numbers from that month, too, is that Supreme, was it Supreme Power?
Yes.
Squadron Supreme, Supreme Power?
Mm-hmm. Right,
they
right.
moved to the Max line, out of the Max line,
yes, to
thinking
Max.
That they would sell
more.
And they now are selling less than they did before they moved from Max. They they're selling 2,000 issues less than they did before they moved.
Yeah, because we all wanted to see Wonder Woman naked or whoever that chick is.
So it's like, so part of me also wonders sometimes for like little weird things like that is how these,
well,
it's such a weird audience.
But that's the market, yeah. And that's good. That's the market saying, you know something, nice try. No, we like it this way. And let's see what happens in a year. Maybe they'll respond.
But just taking that in context also is, you know, they had some pretty strange things going on with that series before the move. I mean, they had
in what way?
Well, just they broke it into the miniseries, and then they sort of relaunched the whole book, and that may play into some of.
Well, their sales did go up immediately after they switched, and then they plummeted.
They went up for the issue one,
right?
And that is I think that's a very different case study. Because I think what spurred that whole move from Max is that there were a lot of shop owners in the South that wanted to see Supreme Power in their stores.
Then why aren't they ordering it?
Because they couldn't sell it in stores because of, the Gordon Lee trial.
But now they can't they?
Yeah, because it's not a Max title anymore.
Right, Marvel Knights it can, because, it's a PG-13.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's...
If you put it in movie terms.
That's so Marvel did exactly what the distributor or the retailers wanted, and it didn't work.
So should they have...
I don't know. It's just a weird thing.
I guess we'll see in a year what their decision is.
I just brought it up
because I stuck with the title. I loved Supreme Power, and now I'm buying Squadron Supreme.
How is it?
I love it. I don't think it has lost.
That was what Bendis always said about Powers and moving Jessica and the Pulse to the regular Marvel Universe, and everyone's like, "Hey, no more swear words. You're screwing it up." And it's like,
I think it's
yeah, but a year later, it's gone. was that his decision?
It's an interesting example of how
I think that was more about the art than it really was anything editorially. And I think because he had so many other projects coming up, it just kind of became a.
It's interesting.
Right, exactly. Yes.
Interesting how we consider maturity, what a mature title is, what we think the barriers are to mature titles, and how those barriers might not really exist, how freaked out we are by it, but maybe it's not.
One of my favorite Tom Cater's quotes, and this is going back to probably episode 3 or 4 of Around Comics, is that...
Go to hell, Chris.
is that... For mature readers only, comics appeal to the immature reader in all of us.
I want to see naked Wonder Woman.
Yeah, and but does that make Superman. For a better comic?
Well, then why didn't World Watch Chuck Austin's great X-rated comic become like a legendary book?
It's cheaper to download.
Because we have to pretend that we don't like them. I mean, you know what I mean? We have to have that illusion, that veil of illusion that we're not titillated by naked Wonder Woman when...
Well, I think
we group
weird things together as being mature.
True.
We consider things mature. We consider language, strong language mature. We consider nudity mature. We consider certain types
graphic
of violence.
Certainly.
Maybe. I don't
graphic
really know
horror,
anymore.
Graphic
yeah.
violence. I but remember those, Swamp Thing not having any nude women, but like, you know.
Those things appeal to different parts of whatever your mind is. You
I
know?
Think
but
a lot of it
them
is.
All together.
A lot of it is buzz. It's how much buzz is created. You talked to, was it in the Chuck Dixon interview about Snakes on a Plane?
Yes. Yes, we did.
Where is the buzz for this movie coming from?
Well,
the
from
internet.
Fox. Yeah, from Fox or whoever, whatever the movie company.
It's got to
yeah.
be more than that. It's got to be internet people. It's
well, sure
be
it is.
My friend
it is,
emailed it to me like having, 7 months ago, and I thought it was a joke.
Well, then, having MySpace right. immediately leap on it, and yeah. you know, I mean, and obviously that's. I mean, I'm sorry, it is powered by Fox and everything. Yeah. So
snakes on a
again,
podcast.
I don't know which movie company is making the film, but yeah, I mean, it's. I give them a lot of credit for obviously marketing and getting the buzz out there. It is such a knucklehead title. And at first it's like, what is that? And then it's like, oh.
Oh, Sam Jackson.
Oh, it's Snakes on a Plane.
You know, and now, yeah, everyone is in on the joke. And as Chuck said, they went back and kind
get
of.
Snakes off this motherfucker.
I think sweetened some scenes to kind of make it more outlandish and everything. And, you know, it sounds like it's going to be Deep Blue Sea instead of but yeah, instead right. of Snakes on a Plane.
So, I mean, it's just right. a silly movie.
But
funny
a lot of it's buzz.
Silly movie. Yeah,
no, it's all buzz. It's all buzz.
And so you can have one mature reader's yeah. title. That gets some buzz, and then you can have another one that isn't getting much buzz. And that's, in some small way, what we try and do in little itty-bitty bursts on the show is to create some little bit of buzz.
Yeah, pay attention to this book. That's why we're having this person on.
Exterminators is an incredibly well-crafted book.
Eh.
I just don't like
books. Oh, hush.
No, I understand. I'm with Sal. And I haven't read it.
No.
It's just like... Bugs are icky. I'm sorry. I
and I think
over.
That's the issue with that. Is it, you know, one of the biggest fears in the world is a fear of bugs.
Absolutely,
and I, you know, it's
man.
Like I myself.
I'm afraid of snakes and I'm a little afraid of flying. But,
well, but gonna
I'm going to be in the front row screaming, get these snakes off this motherfucking plane.
Yeah, really? See, when bills are overhyped, though, when things are overhyped, yeah. sometimes I'm like, you know, fuck you. You don't need my
$10.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah. You're trying too hard for my money, and I'll pass. I'll certainly hear what the
word
is.
You need to
is,
trick John Centris into giving you his money.
Well, no, it's just, you know what, it's just like stunting happens in every media, every
oh,
form
yeah.
of media, and it happens in comics. And that's why it's like, all right, let me see what it is first before I really get excited about it. And it's just because we've been through too many generations of books.
You just brought up a point that I really wanted to go back to in the whole thing with trades.
Wrote
and,
it
and
back.
Is that because of the way that comics are sold and marketed, you have such an issue with, and I think it's part of the reason why singles will survive, is because I don't want to invest $9.99 or $12.99 in something I may not like. You have to order your comics, you know, 2 months in advance,
right.
or come to the shop, and hopefully they'll be there,
right.
you know, if the shop owner ordered enough for you, or, you know, whatever it may be. You don't get to see this product beforehand. You might see a 5-page preview or, you know, 7-page preview online, but it doesn't give you the same feel of what the series is going to be like. And you probably have to read 2 or 3 issues before you really know whether you like it or not. That's investing, you know, $15 into something, $10, $15 into something before you even know if you like it or not. And there's no way to return it. There's no way, you know what I mean? I think that's part of the issue why comics, you know, in single form will last and why there's such a problem with moving over to trades as a whole, and it's such a risky investment for creators to go, okay, well, we're not going to release singles, we're going to release a trade, because, you know, are you going to spend $15-$20 on a trade that you don't know anything about, that you've never, you know what I mean?
Well, that's true too.
The only thing you can base it on sometimes is the creator and, you know, and the artist and the writer
and what little you hear about the story before it finally hits print.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it goes back to those little guys that are never going to get that sort of, you know, buzz going on a book. Maybe they will here and there. I mean, but we all have seen plenty of books that are good
yeah.
that never get bought, you know,
yes.
that are sitting on the shelves and people just don't buy them. You know, you might hear good things from everybody about it, but they just don't get, you know, purchased.
Are we getting closer to the age of anthologies as a guide to help us buy comics?
It depends what the format of the anthology is, because, like, if you're going to go back to Marvel Comics Presents or Marvel Superheroes and,
yeah, Marvel.
And Action Comics
Weekly.
And as Mark Waid always says, it's weekly, W-E-A-K or L-Y. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, if you're only giving me 4 pages or 8 pages of a of, you know, and that's the only chapter. I don't know if that works. Although it's interesting,
where are the manga
2000 ADs, I think, do it better.
2000 AD. Look at Shonen Jump manga, the manga
uh-huh.
magazines, black
well,
and
sure,
white.
They do it. Yeah.
100, you know, 360 pages for $6.
But isn't that? And you know, when I spoke to Colleen Duran, because we talked about
take a
manga. Because I'm not a big manga reader, but I wonder is that more because they're able to present it in that form, because this is like literally like the 50th time they have presented this story?
Yeah, but you had to start somewhere. I mean, you know,
but that's what I'm saying.
I'm gonna name drop now. Phil Hester told me, you know, him and his friends, you know, him and his friends, you know, always talk about where is the American Shonen Jump? Why is there no publishers out there doing an American Shonen Jump? And I've, you know, talked to him a little bit about trying to produce something like that, finding independent, you know, artists that have a series and don't have the money to put out, you know, 10 issues or something.
But again, that's not what the manga guy's doing, because, again, this is like something that's
No.
And what I was going to say is maybe instead would the Essentials and would the new showcases that DC is doing, would that work better as a magazine formatted $9.99?
Well, what if you took a bunch of books, you know,
the size or half the size?
What if you took a bunch of independent books that were published last year?
That didn't make it, didn't sell all that well.
And you take chapters from all those. Yeah, well, Boom's making it, though. They're doing pretty well. You know. But, I mean, you pick out five or six from different publishers. You know, different small publishers or independent stuff.
That's a lot of rights issues, isn't it?
It is, but what you're, you know, but, I mean, what you're trying to do is promote the book so that it sells the issue. You know what I mean? You're only giving a taste, and that's what you're trying to, you know, promote it as. You're
didn't
just giving.
Did Shooting Star do that a couple years ago? And I seem to remember a couple big anthologies that literally only had like 4 to 6 pages of each, like, concept. And it's like, this is what we're thinking of. What do you think? And here's like 20. It's like 20.
Well, the Shonen Jump, the way they do it though, is like it's like 22 to 40 pages of a story.
Of each story,
and then they go and, you know, if it works in that format, they publish them in the phone book. Yeah, they graduate to the trade. You know.
So this in Shonen Jump, that is the first time that we're seeing this story.
Well, that we're in America seeing it. Yeah. I don't believe in Japan that's the way it is, but I'm not exactly sure on that.
Well, Tom, you picked up the Brave New World from DC last week. So did I. They handcuffed me into
that's only a couple of, you know.
I was disappointed in that compared to Countdown, I got to be honest.
Well, but it was four. Was it
six.
Four?
Six.
Okay. Yes. Six new DC series that you can try out all in one collected.
Yeah. I think it's a bad idea. Yeah. I don't think it's a bad idea, because what ended up happening is I read it, and I was kind of interested in OMAC until I read the preview, and then I was like, oh, I'm not going to read that. And then I saw the Atom, and I was like, I didn't want to get the Atom at all, and I read the preview, and I'm like, oh, I'll try it. I picked it out, and I loved it. And for a buck, you can't beat that.
But that's a stunt that DC is losing money on.
Yeah. I mean,
you know,
but what if they did that in black and white? What if they printed those on newsprint in black and white just to give you a feel for the
book? Putting the cover stuff.
I think they still kind of lose. Yeah,
you're not putting.
Well, no, they're still not making money off.
Well, no. How about this? How, you know, Marvel and DC come out with new books.
No, I don't think
the paper costs.
Marvel and DC come out with new books every year. How about seasonally, quarterly? You come out with a Marvel Presents Summer. Marvel Presents, you know, presents, you know. Fall and DC
Marvel
does
prevents fall.
Prevents fall. Right. I had a mouthful of
fall.
No more seasons.
You know, or DC has their Brave New World for, you know, summer 2007, and they do that quarterly, and so they say they're going to put out six new books every quarter, and they put this out as a preview, and so you get, you know, the all six preview issues for a buck. And they do that four times a year. Is that not a great? I'd pick that up every quarter.
Now a company like DC can afford to do
that. Right. Yeah. The smaller guys can't.
Yeah.
They can't afford to lose the money on,
well,
on that.
Well, you know, okay. So,
but
a,
maybe they
a
could
boom
if they
and whoever,
you know, with
up.
Better educated. Well, that's what I meant. What if you get multiple publishers to put out a black and white anthology piece that you're selling for?
I just think that pie's not big enough to cut up. I could be wrong, but that's
I don't know. I mean, you know.
I think what you end up having to do is you're going to end up having to play around with the price point so much that you're almost going to price yourself out of it in a sort of a way. If you get so many people together, you're going to have to make a book a certain size, and to make a book a certain size, you're going to have to charge a certain amount, and then all of a sudden it stops being that cheap book.
Well,
yeah.
And what I wanted to point out, Sal, I'm not trying to plug this, but I was going to point. And I
plug only,
I
only, away.
I, well, all right. I've got a free magazine that I'm giving out at San Diego and Chicago. I'll be giving away copies as well at the site at wordballoon.com. but it's a
32 I believe it is also available at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles.
It is available at Dark Tower Comics, absolutely, and other Chicago stores as well.
John Sentris's car.
Yes, and it's, yeah, and it's a word balloon magazine that I put together with a local publisher. I can tell you this costs us a quarter a book, and it's a 32-page black and white book. And this was with contributions from artists as far as getting some panels from guys like Jeff Darrow, covers from Mark Schultz, Tim Bradstreet, the Luna Brothers gave me an ad, crazy stuff. Tom Jane gave me 3 pages of his new science fiction story that he's going
to
have.
Yeah, but if it's stuff you're already published, if you're going to publish
stuff.
Maybe
that's where the internet is going to be.
All right, so that's a quarter for 32 pages.
That's a black and white 32-page book.
But you're not buying. But you're not buying it in the bulk that, you know,
10,000.
That's pretty low compared to something like Image would maybe, you know, 100,000 copies or something that they're promoting.
That
they're promoting 6 or 8 books in?
I don't think they're printing more than maybe 30,000.
But I don't think.
Okay, but still, at 30,000, well, you're dropping the price on that down to. Chris, you would know better than I would.
You think 100?
30,000.
18 cents?
Brave New World might go 100.
Yeah, you're gonna.
So if selling it at a buck, you.
But don't you guys think that this is where
he's not. Paying creators for this.
Right, that's my point.
I mean, no, really I understand that, but like, you're paying the creators for the work that it's promoting. You know what I mean? You're paying creators for the work that you're selling the book as an ongoing series or as a miniseries or whatever it may be, and you're creating that, you know what I mean? This is the marketing part of that book. It's just a different way of using your marketing.
But don't you think that's where the internet is going to have to play a bigger part?
I think it is playing a bigger part.
With these small companies, it doesn't make sense for them to print that, but it makes total sense to let people read it online. You know, why not?
Well, that's what I think, Tom, and that's what I was wondering if, like, and that's why I started to use the example of Speakeasy earlier, because they were talking about maybe we're going to put our, you know, first 3 or 4 issues online, and then if people really like it, then we'll make the trade.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
You know, would you pay... And, yeah, it's back to how much would saving from not printing it on paper save the company, and how much of that gets passed along to the consumer.
Because you have to consider how often people even argue about buying paper copies of anything. You know, like, there's talk about how do we get people to even buy copies of books that they like.
Right.
You know, like, well, that's sort of the thing that
The digital book, the only thing that's keeping the digital book from being in existence and us wiping on paper and just downloading books into Uhura's, you know, tricorder or something, is the interface, is what we're looking at, the screen.
A quality reader.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And that, you know, feeling of a book that you get. You're not getting it right now from a flat surfaced, screen.
But they're working on it.
They are working on it.
And there's actually an interesting column.
Paper Cut had a fantastic column,
all about readers, electronic readers in the medium, and what's out there and what's coming, and you know, electric, you know, digital paper is the new wave. You know, Epson's working on digital paper. I think
he said as soon as they can make a digital reader smell like 25-year-old pulp paper, he's on board.
As soon as they can make the cover fall off.
He says we're 5 years away from the paperless society. Because he's a big futurist guy.
No.
I know it's. You know what's funny? I work at an accounting firm.
No offense, Chris.
We went paperless 2 years ago. And I have like 5 stacks of paper at my desk. Paperless is funny because anyone who remembers using paper wants to use paper. That's always like the way it's going to...
Well, that's generational then.
I mean, I mean, eventually, we're down the line, but when people say paperless society, like the imagery of like, oh, I'm just going to shove all this paper in the dumpster and that's it. But like, we use so much paper.
I think it's paperless, not paperless.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
It's less.
Because what are we going to wipe our rear ends with, you know, when we're done?
We won't have to go to the bathroom
exactly.
Anymore.
Seashells.
In the future.
Yeah, the shells, like from Demolition Man, the 3 shells. He doesn't know how to use the 3 shells.
Little Rob
it's
Schneider.
Very rare that we get to use a nice Demolition Man.
that's really the best line for that film.
We need more Demolition Man quotes.
Absolutely. I love that movie, too.
Wow, well, this has been a deep conversation.
We touched on some great stuff.
I found my Holy Grail comic today.
Ooh, yeah.
What's the Holy Grail comic?
It's DC Comics presents superheroes fighting super gorillas. And it's
I remember that. I totally remember that.
The best one,
Rod is on the cover.
I haven't read it yet, but the best one looks to be Wonder Woman fighting alien apes. Apes, not only intelligent apes, but intelligent apes
alien
from another planet who have come to Earth
with higher technology
to fight Wonder Woman.
Tom, have you been a Kongorilla fan?
I know.
Congo Bill and Congo Gorilla.
I have. I also got my Secret Origins Gorilla Ape issue here, like a couple weeks ago. I haven't read it yet, but it's got the origin of Gorilla.
Fraction ever send you that?
Rex Mantoo.
No, he didn't.
He emailed me again and asked. He said, "Is that Tom? I'm sending that to." Then that was like last week.
Okay.
So he's
I know that Matt just got back from
Heroes Con.
I just worked like an 8-hour day. Boo-hoo.
It wasn't a vacation.
Yeah,
right?
It wasn't like, yeah, I didn't.
Well, I believe he is still sending that to
I'm
you.
I'm
so.
Kidding.
Stepping
Matt.
Back from cons, that's tough. That's tough. You guys know.
Well, you're heading out to San Diego, right?
I am
so
the
next time we see you, you'll be tanner and
don't kid yourself.
More well spoken.
I'm gonna be like all the guys that come to Rosemont and like, never get out in the sun and never actually see Chicago. I think that's it.
I've been to Chicago 5 years in a row. I've never seen the Sears Tower.
The Stevens Convention Center and the airport. That's all they know from Chicago.
Yeah.
And
the Blue Line.
You know what I'm gonna know? The floor of a bar. So I'm gonna get so drunk, I'm gonna pass out.
Well, John, what's your big plans for San Diego? What you got going on out there?
Well, let's see. I know we're gonna promote the Word Balloon magazine, and I will be at the Century Guild booth, and Dan Brereton, who is the cover artist and the lead feature in the magazine, talking about the relaunching of the Nocturnals. Olympic Comics or Olympic Publishing is putting out the book. And I know that...
is that new material?
It is new. It's going to start with 3 hardcovers of the original 4 books with added stories and supplemental material. Like, he's taking the role-playing story that he had in the role-playing game version of the Nocturnals, and he's fattening it up with images and making it kind of like a pulp story where it's going to be prose and individual splash pages.
I really love his art. His stuff is just so fantastic.
And you bet, Thrill Killer, one of the best Elseworlds. Yeah. Dan and I are going to do something on Saturday at Olympic Publishing's booth at Century Guild. And then on Sunday, there's a podcast panel. And I'll be there at 11:30 on Sunday morning. And other than that, I'm just going to be wandering around.
Just so you know, I'm sending operatives to that panel to ask the question, how come Around Comics isn't here?
I think believe me, I understand.
Anyone going to San Diego Con, I'll send you a 8x10 glossy of Tom Cater's autograph. If you ask that question at the to John Suntras, only to John.
I'll be interested to see who shows up at that panel. You know, although B. Clay Moore's going to be there doing the narrating. Or the moderating.
Yeah, that'll be a funny group. Yeah,
I hate you, by the way. We're like, hey, John, look at our new Around Comics business card. John's like, oh, here's my new magazine.
Well, it's 32 pages. It's you know, they're highlights of interviews that I did with
It looks
creators.
Awesome.
It does look really nice, John.
I'm really pleased with everyone that contributed from like Bendis, Jeff Johns, Jeff Darrow, Rucka. Tom Jane, Rucka.
Hey, guys.
Jeff Lowe.
And on the back page, he mentions he owns the Miracle Man trades. For all you people who can't freaking get those.
Oh,
what's that mean?
Why?
You just mentioned them on your show.
John Suntras also owns a goose that lays golden
eggs. I almost bought
X.
my mini disc player and everything, and I promise next time I will, and we will do a Word Balloon roundtable with you gentlemen. It would be my pleasure.
Oh, we would love that.
I haven't done it yet, and I've only, the only other people I've extended the same invitation to are really the Crankcast guys, Norton and
You know what? We ought to do it all. We ought to do a Chicago...
That'd be
round table.
That'd be fun. Is it just the 3 of us that are doing it in Chicago?
There's you and us and Crankcast and Neil Gorman with Comicology is here. Is anybody else in Chicago that you know of?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
There probably is.
I just don't know.
I think
blew
Mike Norton's mind with that link to the Perfect Strangers fan fiction.
Is it creepy, balky, sex stories?
Well,
there's one where it's
Balky walking around Chicago after 9/11 and like his feelings about what it means to be free in America.
Wow, I really think Balky is the perfect vessel
there's
to
also,
tell this story.
Before we run out of time, there's a really awesome one where Laverne and Shirley take a train to Chicago and Lenny and Squiggy screw up the train and somehow it becomes a time machine. And they end up meeting Larry and Balky and like going out on a double date.
Who has time to write this stuff?
Wow.
I've read the metric. I have
I'm sorry. As Mike Norton said, it is soul shattering. So I think I wrecked all of you guys. There's some of them are serious. They're not all comedies.
They're all funny.
There's one where it's just Larry's girlfriend thinking about how she ever ended up with Larry. And it's not funny. It's like,
you know, he was so good in my favorite year, Mark Lynn Baker.
And yes, with I Peter O'Toole. I love them.
One of my truly favorite, like, guilty pleasure movies.
Yeah.
He's on a new sitcom that's probably already been canceled
and
at this point.
And he moved from Madison, Wisconsin to Chicago just like I did.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, there you go.
Hey, guys.
But okay, I think that's another episode.
Time to start
Mark Lynn Baker. It's time to go.
All right,
folks. Doesn't he have a comic coming out?
Thank you for listening in again. We really appreciate it. John, it is always a pleasure to have you here.
My pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Tom, Sal, thank you as always for all the hard work that you do. Yeah. Everyone have a fantastic rest of your week. We'll be back again Monday with another full-length episode of Around Comics. In the meantime, we'll be everywhere in...
And Around Comics.
If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. For that and the latest in comics news and opinions, go to www.aroundcomics.com. Music for this show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next week, where the panel will change, but our mission stays the same, bringing you the best in discussion, news, and reviews in and around comics.